Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, June 26, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Philip Kudzai, the elder brother of detained Sunday Mail editor Edmund Kudzai, was arraigned before a Harare magistrate today, facing terrorism charges in connection with internet postings on social networking site Facebook.
The Chitungwiza Resident Trust says it has already taken steps to challenge a High Court application filed Wednesday by the Chitungwiza Town Council seeking permission to demolish illegally erected structures in the satellite town.
We are not happy as residents that what they did does not involve the input of other stakeholders, residents and taxpayers included. Yet in this case, they are actually using taxpayers' money to fight the same taxpayers and taxpayers.
And police say, well, the crime rate in general has gone down by 14% this year. Cases of juvenile rape are rising at an alarming level.
So there's need for them to know that the adults have no right to touch their bodies and violate them. The moment we raise that awareness, we are then a step ahead. And I think in schools, there must be a syllabus that deals with issues of rape.
Philip Kudzai, the elder brother of detained Sunday Mail editor Edmund Kudzai, was arraigned before a Harare magistrate today, facing terrorism charges in connection with internet postings on social networking site Facebook. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Harare magistrate Vakai Chikwekwe ordered Philip Kudzai to join his young brother and editor of the state-controlled Sunday Mail Weekly, Edmund Kudzai, who was this week remanded in custody following his arrest last week on allegations of conspiring to subvert a constitutionally elected government. Just like his brother Edmund, Philip is also facing charges of communicating or publishing falsehoods that are prejudicial to the state. Magistrate Chikwekwe ordered Philip to return to court on July 7th, the same date that the Sunday Mail editor was remanded to. The magistrate also advised Philip to approach the High Court for bail, saying he has no jurisdiction to hear a bail application in a third schedule offense, meaning that the offense is serious. Tawanda Zwekare prosecuted while Philip was represented by Admire Rubaya. Meanwhile, the Sunday Mail editor's bail application is expected to be heard in the High Court tomorrow. In his papers before the High Court, Edmund Kudzai, who denies being the faceless Facebook character called Baba Jukwa, says he is being victimized. He alleges that some unnamed top ZANU-PF officials who were leaking information to the original Baba Jukwa instigated his arrest, fearing that he would use technological expertise to expose them. The Sunday Mail editor claimed that he was hired by the Defense Ministry and the police as a consultant to expose Baba Jukwa and those behind the shadowy character, but was arrested after he provided some information that he obtained using his technological expertise. Edmund claims that those people who turned the tables against him were doing so in order to impress President Robert Mugabe following his recent public spat with Information Minister Jonathan Moyo and other ZANU-PF officials that he called weevils, trying to destroy the former Revolutionary Party from within. The state alleges that the Kudzai brothers conspired to revolt against the government if ZANU-PF had rigged the national elections held last year, which were disputed by the MDCT. If convicted, the Kudzai brothers face life imprisonment. In other news, the MDC formation of Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai claimed that several government departments are not remitting taxes to local authorities, resulting in poor service delivery in all municipalities countrywide. The MDCT Secretary for Local Government, Blessing Chebundo, told journalists in Harare today that local authorities have lost millions of dollars in unremitted taxes from government departments.
Government all kinds of millions of dollars. Of more concern is that departments such as NARA is collecting money from road levies, but none is being remitted to councils.
Chebundo also accused the local government minister Ignatius Chombo of continuously interfering in the management of several local authorities countrywide.
The meeting noted that the heavy-handed and unprofessional interference by Chombo in the running of councils was sabotaging service delivery in local authorities.
Chabundo's remarks followed a meeting held by Mr. Tswangirai and all councillors elected under the MDC ticket countrywide. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Police say while the crime rate in general has gone down by 14% this year, cases of juvenile rape are rising at an alarming level. Speaking at a graduation of officers in Harare today, Police Commissioner General Augustine Chiwuri revealed that rape cases of young girls increased from 1,384 between January and May last year to 1,494 in the same period this year. Chiwuri decried the development, saying a concerted effort was needed to fight sexual crimes. He also took a swipe at members of the Joan Masoe Apostolic Sect for assaulting law enforcement agents last month. Lawmaker Tabitha Kumalo expressed shock at the rape statistics.
These statistics are shocking, and sadly, they are disheartening because rape, obviously, some of these rapes are going to be associated to HIV and AIDS infection. And as a country, we need to move like lightning to deal with this issue of rape sooner than later. Because at the end of the day, every woman, every girl, child is going to be infected with AIDS. And they are all being sent to death because we are not doing anything as a country. I think the time has come for us to bite the bullet and deal with these rape issues decisively and strongly.
Would you say the legislature is doing everything that it should be doing to fight this scourge?
I want to believe as legislature we can do more. There is a need for us to raise awareness on the rights of the girl child in terms of the girl child and the boy child in terms of their bodies. Who is allowed to touch their bodies and who is not allowed to touch their bodies? Because these are minors who are looking up to the same adult, which adult is violating them. So there's need for them to know that the adults have no right to touch their bodies and violate them. The moment we raise that awareness, we are then a step ahead, and I think there's need for now in schools, there must be a syllabus that deals with issues of rape on these kids so that they are educated whilst young.
That was lawmaker Tabitha Kumalo on the line from Lawayo with Ntungamili Nkomo. The Chitungwiza Residents Trust says it has already taken steps to challenge a High Court application filed Wednesday by the Chitungwiza Town Council seeking permission to demolish illegally erected structures in the satellite town. Residents Trust spokesman Marvelous Kumalo says, as local people, they've instructed their lawyers to contest the application seeking to demolish about 14,000 structures illegally built on council land. Chitungwiza was stopped from demolishing the structures by a magistrate court that ruled that it cannot go ahead without a court order. Studio 7 tried to get a comment from Chitungwiza town clerk George Makunde, who refused to answer questions before switching off his mobile phone. But Kumalo accuses the council of approaching the High Court without first seeking the input of stakeholders.
First and foremost, it is the council's right as an institution to approach any court in Zimbabwe, be it the magistrate, the High Court, or any other court. But we are not happy as residents that what they did does not involve the input of other stakeholders, residents and taxpayers included. Yet in this case, they're actually using taxpayers' money to fight the same taxpayers and taxpayers from the town of Chitungwiza. So that alone disheartens us a lot.
Are you going to take any measures to challenge this development?
Yes,
Yes, my brother. We have actually taken measures to challenge this development. We have instructed our lawyers to make sure that they chip in and contest the application by Chitungiza Municipality.
You, Mr. Marvelous Kumalo, you are said to be among those cited for spearheading illegal construction on the undesignated lands. What's your comment on this?
On that one, I think it was a deliberate act of mischief by the state-owned the Herald newspaper. I have already instructed my lawyers to write to the Herald newspaper seeking that they retract the statement and issue a public apology, failure of which I will take legal action.
That was Chitungwiza Residents Trust spokesman Marvelous Kumalo on the line from Chitungwiza.
The African Union Summit officially opened in Sipopo, Malabo, in Equatorial Guinea today, with the African Union Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma calling on African leaders to stick to their pledge to work towards silencing guns on the continent by the year 2020. Our reporter Sandra Nyaira has more details from Malabo.
Dr. Dlamini Zuma said without peace and stability, Africa will not be able to develop its agriculture, create jobs and food security.
Agriculture is critical in our industrialization efforts. Agro-processing of our agricultural products are not only critical for food security, but also to increase earnings, job creation, and our broader goal of industrialization. For agriculture and our environment to flourish, we need conditions of peace and stability, and for our people not to be under threat from armed gangs, terrorists, and human and arms traffickers.
African leaders are gathered in Malabo to recommit their desire to building a better Africa with the mantra, "The Africa we want," under Agenda 2063, the continent's vision and plan for the next 50 years that Dlamini Zuma told the conference would be adopted at the next summit. The summit is running under the theme Agriculture and Food Security. Dlamini Zuma said the youth are in the majority on the continent, but said they are hardly interested in agriculture because the continent's farming methods are old.
Our agriculture in the main is still quite traditional and not modern. A practical priority, therefore, is to modernize and mechanize, to use science and technology.
2014 is Africa's year of promoting and improving agriculture. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said he was concerned by conflicts in some countries like South Sudan and the Central African Republic, saying they are a blight on Africa's progress. He said only peace and stability can help Africa move towards eradicating hunger and poverty and reaching the Millennium Development Goals.
Agriculture does not simply produce the food people need. It is a source of empowerment, an engine for economic growth, and a vital contributor to environmental services. It is the glue that binds rural societies. I commend the African Union on its resolve to end hunger and malnutrition by 2025. You have demonstrated your commitment by declaring 2014 the year of African agriculture and food security.
He said the climate change is one of Africa's major challenges, adding leaders on the continent need to raise their voice on the issue. He invited them to New York to discuss climate change in September and its impact mostly on the developing world.
It's the African continent which is most affected, but you do not have much resources to adapt and mitigate this climate change phenomenon. And therefore, it is you, African leaders, who will have to raise your voice to the world. Our top priority must be to start mobilizing the additional investment needed to limit global temperature rise to less than 2 degrees Celsius and promote low-carbon, climate-resilient development.
Meanwhile, one.org's Do Agric petition, which calls on African leaders to recommit to spending at least 10% of national budgets on effective agriculture investments, has gathered more than 2 million signatures of support from African citizens across the continent. The campaign makes a case for better strategic policies and transparent public investments that will better support smallholder farmers, especially women, and lift millions of Africans out of poverty. Reporting for Studio 7 from Sipopo in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, this is Sandra Nyaira.
Meanwhile, Agriculture Minister Joseph Made, who is accompanying President Robert Mugabe to the African Union Summit in Equatorial Guinea, says Zimbabwe, though hamstrung by the shortage of resources, is doing all it can to help fund new and small-scale farmers. He says these farmers are doing much better now since the government parceled out land taken from former white commercial farmers. Speaking on the sidelines of the AU summit after his presentation to African leaders on how the country is coping following the land reform program and how it is helping farmers raise production, Made said the government has also started a cattle restocking program to increase the country's national herd.
The president and chief executive officer of the Initiative for Global Development, Dr. Mina Nedeljkovic, says there's a great potential in Zimbabwe's agribusiness sector, which American investors would like to explore, but are being hampered by the uncertain political situation in the country. Nedeljkovic says investors are currently observing the situation in Zimbabwe with an interest to invest, but most of them are shying away due to some of the repressive economic policies in Zimbabwe that are not conducive for international investors. He says most of them fear the Black Economic Empowerment Program, which compels foreign-owned companies to transfer a 51% stake to local people. Addressing a business forum held at the Voice of America today, he said despite the political challenges in Zimbabwe, his organization is working with SeedCorp and is hoping to get more insight into how other American companies can navigate the current situation and invest in Zimbabwe. Nedeljkovic speaks to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
One of our Frontier 100 companies is from Zimbabwe, SeedCo. They do a lot of the maize seed. So from a company standpoint, we have members from Zimbabwe. From the American company standpoint, as you know, the issue right now in Zim is business likes to have some certainty as to what's happening.
Yes.
And certainly on agribusiness, I mean, I don't need to go through all the issues. So the question now is for American business to feel confident enough what the rules of the game are. And what I've seen on the American side is because of the great potential, so I haven't seen big investments going yet, but I think the interest is there and people want to be assured that their investments are secure once they go in.
You mentioned that agribusiness is the business of the future. What can people in agribusiness do to lure U.S. investors into Zimbabwe?
The agribusiness people is people like SeedCo, some of our member companies say, hey, there's good business here that we can do, and even with all the political difficulties, we can still help you how to navigate. Because, you know, even me, there's 45 years around the continent. If I say today Zimbabwe, do I feel comfortable? I still am not certain. You know, I need to know. So I would maybe even need some of the education. But that's why people like SeedCo or other members of that are foreign tier 100 can deliver that kind of assurances.
That was Dr. Mina Nedeljkovic, President and CEO of the Initiative for Global Development, speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye from Washington, D.C.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
The British Embassy has provided $4 million to the city of Bulawayo to increase its water pumping capacity and provide sanitary facilities to over 140,000 residents. A British ambassador to Zimbabwe, Deborah Bronett, who toured the city's Cretorian waterworks today, said Addressing infrastructure needs and promoting hygiene would significantly reduce cholera outbreaks in the city. She said the money that has been availed to the city between March last year and June this year amounts to £3.5 million or approximately $4 million United States dollars. She said the money is being provided under the Bulawayo Emergency Water Augmentation Program launched to tackle the city's perennial water problems.
Coming up,
Zimbabweans speak out on the teaching of languages in schools as the issue flares up in social networking sites.
But first, we take a look at regional and international news.
Australian officials say they are confident the missing Malaysian jet was on autopilot when it crashed and that the plane's pilots were likely unresponsive due to a lack of oxygen. The comments Thursday are the firmest theory yet offered yet by officials on what may have led to the Boeing 777's disappearance, which has become one of modern aviation's greatest mysteries. The Malaysian Airlines Boeing 777 was headed from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing on March 8 when it disappeared with 239 people on board. It did not send a distress call.
Syria and Iran have joined the fight against the militant Sunni insurgents attempting to take over Iraq. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Malik said today that Syrian warplanes targeted militants earlier this week on the Syrian side of the Iraqi-Syrian border they have used as a gateway to take over large areas in northern and western Iraq. Malik said he welcomed the Syrian air attacks which occurred Tuesday but did not ask for them.
And a Sudanese woman who had received a sentence of death by hanging for apostasy is being freed after she was detained by authorities at the Khartoum airport. A lawyer for Maryam Yahya Ibrahim told VOA that she would be released from detention in Khartoum on Thursday. On Monday, a Sudanese appeals court threw out Ibrahim's death sentence. However, the following day, she was detained by authorities as she tried to leave the country with her husband and two young children.
Zimbabwe is expected to face a tourism boom this year following reports that several airlines are expected to open routes to the once pariah state. Already, the London-listed FastJet Incorporated announced that it will start operating between Harare and Dar es Salaam in Tanzania within the next few weeks. Transport Minister Obet Mpofu tells Studio 7 there will be a boom of airlines applying the Zimbabwe route before the end of the year.
This is true. In fact, it's not only one. There are quite a number of airlines that indicated their interest in starting a route into Zimbabwe. Looking at our facilities, and especially the Victoria Falls facility, which seemed to be quite a center of attraction to all the delegates because of its state-of-the-art nature that is being contracted by a company that was contracted to do so.
But Minister, are Zimbabwe's airports capable of handling a big number of airlines like the ones that are promising to come?
Yes, we have now 3 certified international airports.
That was Transport Minister Obet Mpofu on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
The language issue in Zimbabwe has become continuous as parents and educationists alike are calling for government to review teacher deployments that understand local languages. Minister of State in the President's Office, Simon Kayamoyo, confirmed he has summoned Education's Minister Lazarus Dokora following outcries over the deployment of teachers, especially in Matabeleland, who are unable to speak the local language. The Zimbabwe Constitution stipulates that the country has 16 official languages, meaning the government must accommodate for local schools to provide teaching in local dialects. For a perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Bekezela Maduma with the Gwanda Residents Association and educationist and linguist Felix Mafa. Mafa says it is gratifying that government has decided to take action on this serious matter.
And we need to applaud Mr. Kaya Moyo, the national chairman of ZANU-PF, that he has realized this too late, but it's never late. He has accepted that there has been a disparity between languages, particularly in Matabeleland. He has acknowledged that the poor results are because of language barriers. It's unfortunate that this has taken 34 years to be seen and implemented. We have 16 official languages in this country, according to our constitution, but it would appear the powers that be have no political will to implement the people's wish to the constitution.
Mr. Maduma, working on the ground, can you explain to our listeners what exactly it means when some of these teachers are deployed and are unable to speak the local languages?
It's a very serious issue that needs to be attended to. You know, you have heard the term that Matabeleland, particularly Matabeleland South, is called the Rainbow Province of Zimbabwe. The rainbow of Matabeleland South means that out of the 16 official languages that are in the constitution, 7 of them are spoken in Matabeleland South. And then we have one teacher training college in Matabeleland South, Gwanda Zintech College. And that college recruits 80% people that do not speak local languages. End of their training, the same teachers are deployed into Matabeleland School. They come from provinces outside Matabeleland. They speak predominantly Shona. They are deployed into schools that hardly even know a word, I mean, of a Shona word. The teacher has to teach grade 1, 2, and grade 3. Already, that is a recipe for disaster. When that child gets to grade 7, half of the stuff that the child should have learned by the time they get to grade 7 will have been lost because it was taught to them in the language that they did not understand. Similarly, the teachers fail to understand the children because the children respond in the language that the teacher does not understand. It is now so predominant in Matabeleland that you speak to someone and the first thing that you are told by that person is,
Mr. Mafa, looking at this issue at a college level, what exactly is going on?
There is no one answer to that. There are multiple answers, but there is a core reason why the very speaking teacher, two student teachers in these various colleges. If you went to Nkai, you will find out their secondary school is still in upper top. There's no laboratory facilities. There's no mathematics teachers. So this has retarded educational progress in those areas. You go to Plumtree, you find the same scenario of lack of qualified teachers, teachers again who don't speak their local languages. When they write the national examinations, you always expect chain of D's, and because certain subjects like mathematics, science, geography, our children after A level and after O level, they cannot qualify to enter NAC, they cannot qualify to enter college, Peterson colleges.
Mr. Maduma, as you pointed out earlier, there is a number of languages that are spoken, and the issue of non-Ndebele speakers goes deeper, as of course others or parents and other community leaders are saying. There is also in the region an issue of teaching in local languages included in Kalanga, Venda, Tonga. What exactly are people saying on the ground in regards to that issue?
We cannot saying we are fair if we fight against the Shona dominance and promote Ndebele dominance. What we are saying is, if in Plumtree speak Kalanga, if in Beitbridge speak Venda, that's what we are saying. We are not saying Ndebele is the language. No.
That was Bekezela Maduma of the Gwanda Residents Association. You also heard from educationist Felix Magalela Mafasuanda. Meanwhile, in World Cup matches played today in Brazil, U.S. and Germany qualified despite U.S. losing 1-0. Ghana and Portugal crashed out of the competition despite Portugal overcoming Ghana 2-1.
That brings us to the end of the show. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.